Welcome to Origin Story, where we discuss the lives and careers of underrepresented groups and professional fields. Today, I have Nadia Harris with me from Remote Work Advocate. Remote Work Advocate is the go-to place for companies embracing remote work and individuals willing to work flexibly. Nadia holds an MBA, MSc in personal communication, and MA in international law. So with that, I will pass it over to Nadia. And that in mind, I'd love to hear a little bit about your professional story, Nadia, and how you got to remote working, you know, maybe some of the challenges that you faced getting there, and maybe from your family life to school, college, you know, what has the progression been that way, and kind of what is your origin story?
Adam, first of all, thanks for having me. I'm really happy that you've invited me. So thanks again. That's a very long story, and I'll try to make it brief because I know that we have a lot to discuss. However, I think that my journey has been very complicated, and for a very long time, I wasn't really sure where I was going. But there was one very crucial thing. I knew what I didn't want. But to find out what you don't want, you have to keep experimenting and trying. So I did. So to start with, I am a third culture child, which I think is really important. So I was born and raised in Germany. Part of my family is American, part of my family is Polish. I've lived in different countries as well. And I was not really sure what I would do from the very beginning. In the very beginning, I wanted to be an actress. I went to acting school. I quit. I graduated from music school as well. I played the piano professionally and I actually graduated. I didn't quit. And then I decided, and then I decided, okay, let's do something really meaningful and let's go study law. Because it's meaningful, it makes sense, right? It's a good profession. It's solid and it makes you be like, you know, you have some solid knowledge. So I did that. I graduated and I was prepared to be an attorney. 1 year before my bar exam, I was admitted to the bar exam. I decided to quit this, which was to everyone's surprise, like, how the hell can you do this? You're so close. You have passed all your exams. You've been performing so well. Why? And I was like, well, I don't know why, but I don't think it makes sense. To everybody, it didn't. Me, I didn't know if it did or it didn't. But, well, you know, you say A, you have to say B. And then I started working in an international corporation that was very 9-to-5, that was in the States, with different languages, because I also speak French, also speak Russian, but I don't really talk about it because that's my, probably, I would say, it's not on the very same level as all the rest, which is literally almost native professional, working proficiency. And then it was very 9-to-5. I had to commute every day. And I was so grateful. It was such a great job. But then I thought, hey, something is wrong. I just don't appreciate what's happening here. Back then, that was in 2015, that was no option. I mean, anyone that I would speak with would be like, you're completely crazy. You know, like, you have a problem with yourself. Like, go see a doctor or something, because you're like, whatever, you know. Right. And I thought that was probably the case, but well, I didn't go see a doctor, but I found my first remote job back then. I moved back to Europe. In the meantime, I continued working this way and I thought, hey, that is actually amazing. Then I started my career in HR and working globally with companies in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, and in the States. I loved being around and I thought that was so amazing that you could be everywhere. And then step by step, I started feeling this way that, well, you know, we have technology. I'm a person who doesn't fit in, absolutely not whatsoever. And I think I found my path and here I am in a nutshell.
I love that. And how you kind of ran with your gut feeling. And that's not easy to do when you're going through an education, especially when you're young. I feel like a lot of people will sign up for student loans right off the bat. You know, they're told this is what you need to get here. And then I've met a lot of people professionally who do completely different things than what they had in their degree field. And that seems to be part of the process as well. And, you know, it's a head scratcher also, you know, as to sometimes why we pay as much for school as we do, albeit it's supported by scholarships, grants, you know, things of that nature. But somehow it seems that you get there through all of that. And it seems like you had to kind of figure out your path that way, you know, and feel it out. And you found something that was right for you.
Yeah, but I agree with you that it's definitely not easy. It's never been easy. I chose it the hard way, which I know, and that makes me happy. But I think that what is a paradox and something that I definitely don't agree with is the society asks you to make a choice about your future at the age of 17, 18, 19.
Right.
How can you possibly know who you want to be? I mean, this is ridiculous. You just don't know, you know? Right. Someone else may know for you, but it's not your choice in most cases, you know?
Absolutely. And I remember what I was going through during that period too. And I know I've spoken with a lot of first generation graduates on the show as well. And, you know, there's a lot of intermarried concepts there, but yeah, absolutely. And as you go through things, maybe, you know, there's a way to mitigate that. But that seems to be like a longer topic, you know, maybe it's beyond just doing liberal arts to start and then going out from there. You know, school costs is a whole different thing, I guess. But and that in mind, how did that bring you to found Remote Work Advocate and what you're doing now?
Oh, that's a tough one too. Wasn't easy either. It was passion. I had a feeling that it's just something that I love doing, you know? And then obviously I had a side job and I was working with different companies at that time, also being part of them. But that was such a strong desire to do something that I really like. There was a lot of insecurity as well, because I thought, oh, what will others think of me? You know, of course it was that way when I published my first post on LinkedIn saying that, oh, this is Remote Work Advocate and that's me. I felt like, oh, everyone's going to judge me now. Like, what does she have to say? Yeah. I did come across, you know, opinions that whatever I do is quite, you know, not necessarily down to earth, because it can't be that way because it's different. But then I thought, well, I don't care what you say because I know what I believe in and I know my lifestyle. And then I thought, step by step, I have worked with so many companies and I've worked in so many different countries, and I've always embraced a digital first approach, that it was the time to start sharing this knowledge with others. And that was primarily the goal. And until this day, I write my blog posts and everything on my own. And most things I do on my own still, because it makes me so happy. And it's a safe space, I think, where no one can tell me what to do, or what to write about. I write what I believe makes sense, or I talk about topics that I think are necessary, not necessarily for me, but for others. And I think that my biggest reward is always a positive comment or comments that I receive from others, like, hey, I feel you added value, and that is worth everything to me.
Yeah, and I'm actually really excited to have you here, because I've been following Remote Work Advocate for quite some time, and you know, I'm personally impressed with the amount of content that you put out as, you know, a one woman show that way, and then also you touched on, you know, the strengths of conviction in doing what you're doing, and you have been speaking on remote work before the pandemic, before this has all happened. And how does that translate to how you advise companies and clients, you know, culturally? And is there sometimes clashes with their internal culture that you have to wrestle through and say, you know, this is going to create the best remote work environment, but, you know, here's what we have to maybe demolish internally to make this happen, something like that?
So the longer I work in this field, the more I will dare to say that it's not for everyone and it's not for every company. if we really want to make it work. Because if we treat it as a benefit, saying, oh, I will allow my employees to work from home occasionally or on a longer term, that's a different story. But to actually make it work in a scalable, transparent way, and in an exponential way, there are several components that have to be taken into account. The first one is definitely the people and the mindset, okay? If we are able to function in an agile environment, that's one thing. The other thing is if our mindset goes the extra mile and challenges some patterns that we were used to, which is not easy. And I think that there will be different aspects to flexibility. It can be either the demand and expectations from employees saying that they need more flexibility when it comes to planning their day. But it may be that we'll be dealing with people who are tech first and it's natural. It's been in their life forever. They've been online kids since they remember. And especially I'm talking about the younger generation. It's like pushing them to something unnatural against what was natural since they remember, right? They always had cell phones and they were always, you know, playing games online and the internet was there forever. It wasn't when I was a child, right? So I've been through a transition. I think it's the same in your case. So this definitely, and I think the will to change and also to be able to assess what I see many companies did within the past few years, especially during the pandemic, they would be like, okay, so can you run a virtual workshop for us on how to collaborate remotely? I said, sure, I can. What tools do you have? Oh, we have Skype for Business. And that's all we'll ever have. I said, okay, you want to pay me money? You want to run this? I mean, I'll appreciate it. But the truth is that I knew deep inside that wouldn't drive any change at all, you know? So it's the willingness to be able to improve things and understand what our strengths and weaknesses are and approach it in a very systemic way when we talk about processes, procedures, tools, communication, culture as well. I think that culture is not a place. Culture lies within people, and it doesn't matter where we meet, we should to strengthen connections. But the truth is that culture is everything that's all around us. And we can't also say things like we will lose our culture. I hate that, absolutely. Yeah. I've studied intercultural communication and cultures. Again, I'm really into cultures, and cultures evolve with time. You can't say we have something that will be there forever, because that's just not true. So everything will evolve, you know? Right.
Yeah, and I've seen multiple company cultures evolve myself from the startup side to, you know, much larger ad agencies. And, you know, there are fundamental things like, yeah, sure, it's, you know, a little bit more difficult to change the culture at a large company, but, you know, you can start with, it feels like the internal team that you're dealing with, and, you know, maybe other teams will see what they're doing and like that from there, and maybe try to mirror that in their own teams. And I feel like, you know, a good idea seems to always be contagious. And so what kind of services do you tend to offer companies with Remote Work Advocate?
Well, so now I am engaged in a long-term relationship with one. So there's everything, definitely. But generally, I do things as well. And I've been doing things on the side as well, because it broadens horizons. And I think that that means to work smart, you know, what you learn in one company or what you share with them adds value in a different one. And that is, I think I'm a living example of the sharing economy in one person. So that is very funny. No, but yeah, so what I'm passionate about, maybe this way, and definitely several aspects. So I do like offering services or solutions that serve their purpose. So there is never a one size fits all approach. Obviously, when it comes to webinars or workshops, there are some patterns that can be repeated, like async communication principles around virtual meetings, structuring workflows in a digital environment. Then that is something that is very systemic. But when it comes to the rest, it's basically virtual, remote, hybrid playbook designs, content writing as well, toolkit assessments, audits, checking out whether the tools serve their purpose, whether we use them properly, and how we can leverage the entire toolkit in our company. And also I do one thing that not many people know about when it comes to remote. I love mapping talent remotely. So that means if a company says, oh, we don't know how much to pay, we want to hire someone elsewhere, how much should we pay? If we want to have this, you know, there is this big discussion whether we should pay remote people the same that we pay in big cities.
Right.
So I do this mapping. And we come to conclusions together, and that is really exciting. So especially if you have very distant locations, so you have companies from the US that are hiring in India or hiring in Berlin, for example, in Germany, right? Within the same department, how to do it right. There are calculators to do this within several companies, but they don't always respond to every company's needs. So at this stage, it adds value if it's done manually and also benchmarked against competition, which has to be done manually, and something that I love because I get to know a lot about the market.
Cool. And then do you feel like for individuals that differs when we're talking about culture in general?
You mean culture, that the culture is different when they work remotely than when they
And like if somebody was in another country, say like India, that there would be cultural differences that you'd have to kind of look at what the rates were there as well, you know, in comparison, like a US company paying employees there versus an Indian company paying Indian employees there?
So the first thing, which is a spoiler, I'm actually writing a blog post about it right now. So this exact topic. My response to your question, there are two mini responses, maybe that way. The first aspect is definitely the pay range. There is a huge gap. There is a huge gap when we talk about Indian companies hiring Indians. And American companies hiring Indians or European companies hiring. It's ridiculous. Sometimes when I look at all the salaries, then I literally like need to look twice and I'm like, is that true? It's almost impossible in some cases. So then again, you really have to benchmark against your industry and you have to know what your talent pool is to be able to offer a competitive salary. That's one thing. And the other thing is definitely the cultural differences. There are cultural differences indeed. And I think that a big problem is that many companies and many people are not aware of these differences. They think that since we are a global village, there is a one-size-fits-all approach and everyone knows how to communicate easily because we are just all online, which is absolutely not true. Maybe one example that I can share very quickly and that I'm also describing in the post that hasn't been released yet. Probably when you release this recording, it's going to be there. So if so, then everyone's invited. A few years ago, worked with a manager who had a team that was mostly from the UK and from the US, and there were several team members from India. And I was consulting them, obviously, for exactly the topic that I just described. And then he would tell me that, you know, this person in India seems not to be proactive at all. This person can't keep up with their US friends. They don't express, you know, their willingness to do different things and this and that. I'm probably going to fire him because he's the worst in the whole team. And, you know, and I've evaluated the entire performance and I said, well, you know, that's a rock star. The thing is that it's just something within their culture that they won't be speaking things out loud, especially in front of American and British people who are different by nature. So you can't make this person a leader within these circumstances here right now, but they can be an amazing contribution to the team. And I think that's the cultural diversity that we need to learn to really gain competitive advantage as a company and as every team.
That makes sense. And I think that's something that's super important to look at when you're assessing company culture. And then, you know, as individual people are looking at companies that they're going to work for, I think that's a hugely like underrated part of the job search experience is like, you know, yeah, you work your way through the process, but then, you know, when you got the job offer on the table, that's a whole other negotiation round, and you have negotiation power during that time. And I feel like a lot of individuals and a lot of companies don't realize that that is like a whole other half of the negotiation process.
Absolutely.
And then just in terms of companies or individuals contacting you to get advisement, and I might do another call out to this towards the end of the session here, how can they contact you?
I think I'm everywhere. That's a good and a bad thing. So, yeah, just Google me. No, I mean, that's not too humble what I said right now, but that's true. Yeah. So you can find me everywhere on social media, and but primarily really through the website, remoteworkadvocate.com, especially if it's business related, please do so. And I don't always respond immediately. Sometimes I also must admit that I don't respond at all. And sometimes someone has to ping me because there's a lot happening. So yeah, but.
So Nadia Harris, remote work advocate. On the same topic for equity and remote work, and this is a good segue that way, what were your personal difficulties in becoming a remote worker? You know, as you kind of worked your way through educational fields, and like what attracted you to it initially?
Okay, again, I'm going to speak like a lawyer now. The answer is both simple and complicated. No, but it is. So let's start with the legal part, indeed. So when you study law, you're usually involved in a certain legal system in one country, and that was the case. So for me, that was a massive limitation and something that I didn't want to happen, because I knew that if I do this, I will be doing the same, I would say, I don't want to say the same thing, but I would be within the same field all the time, most probably, okay? Because I will be really working within this legal system, and that caused me to obviously challenge this. But now, for example, I'm also involved in many legal aspects of remote working as well, and especially within the EU. So I do understand different labor laws as well and how they work and all that kind of stuff. But that was a big limitation, definitely. And that caused me to change my way of thinking. And for me, when it comes to, I would say, challenges or even obstacles, and I'll be very honest with you, I hope I won't regret what I'm saying right now. The world is completely biased when it comes to judging you, who you are and where you come from. See, right. My big advantage is that my first and last name doesn't tell you much of who I am and where I come from. Okay. And
that's a big thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Very true. Right. So you can play in every location, can't you? Right. And in addition to that, me being native in different languages, that is even an additional asset, which I think for me is great, but I think it's terrible because in many situations I had to sell myself as someone from a different location or being someone else or working somewhere else or having some kind of different experience. Because if I said that I lived here, not there, I am primarily located here, not there, or I have graduated in this field within this school and not a different one, I would be a no. Great example to share with you, which is completely ridiculous. So for years, I also worked as a translator, which was a side job, and also legal translations. So, I mean, I had to use the law to some extent, right? Since I've gone so far. Yeah, and it was this way that when I lived in the States, I was a legal translator and life interpreter as well when it comes to literally everything related to this topic. And then that was all good. And they didn't, for example, require any exams or anything. They certified me internally and everything was fine. And they would obviously pay me in dollars. But then when I moved to Europe, they would say that similar gigs, they would say, no, because we are looking for someone with experience from somewhere else, and you can't do this because you don't have a degree in the US, but you have a degree in Europe. I'm like, come on, I just did it over there, you know, for such a long time. So they would dismiss me and tell me I don't qualify, whereas I applied again for remote, you know, positions, and that can be done remotely, and that I've been doing this for many years. And then they said yes over there because I was one of them, and here, for example, I wasn't. So that's very ridiculous. And I think that it's a huge challenge that we really tend to look at where the people come from, and even to this extent that since remote work has been on the rise for quite a while, also pre-pandemic, especially for IT people, right? Then I remember when I was working with companies years ago in HR and also recruitment, 2015, 16, 17, they would say, oh, you know, there are plenty of people in this town with this skill set. We can hire them easy. And I said, no, you cannot, because they actually work remotely. So that was this bias, like, okay, you live in a small town, so that means you probably make less money.
Right.
How can you think things like this? You know, we shouldn't be judged by our location. It's my choice where I live right now. But again, people will look at it like, you're a better sort if you live in New York, or if you live in London, or if you live in Berlin. But if you live in a village, then you're worse. And I hope that I'm not going to regret what I said. I don't mean to insult anyone. And I think absolutely the opposite. But that's what the world thinks. It still has this biased approach that it will give you the opportunity if you're in a bigger place, you know, that has a reputation, which I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Definitely. And I relate to everything you're saying there. I've known other people in law that, you know, can't even practice outside of their country because, you know, it's specific to the laws there, and they have to get completely recertified when they go to another country. And I think another thing that reverberated with me is, you know, you have a name like Nadia Harris or Adam Smith, like, you know, people might not know that I'm also German, Polish, and that my mother's name is Bargelski, and, you know, that I grew up low income or went to school on a Pell Grant, or, you know, that I'm not from New York originally. You know, there's all those things that you look at. And I also realize, you know, the privilege that I've had in having that name, you know, versus not having that name, you know, and being able to kind of blend in that way too. But, you know, I feel like if I put out my same resume and I said, oh, like, I live in Milwaukee, and you know, I've never worked in New York, and you know, there's just all these things of clout that go into how somebody's perceived, and that definitely reverberated with me there as well.
Absolutely.
And do you feel like remote work breaks barriers between borders in a way? I know you mentioned working with some people from different countries and bridging the gap. Are there ways you feel that, you know, it makes more of a global village?
Definitely, yes. There is a lot to do, because I'd love this to expand to a better initiative, because I think, again, that the most privileged people are those who live in developed countries and have the opportunity, thanks to technology and even laws, to work remotely, okay? And the ones that really should get the opportunity in other countries maybe still don't, okay? Because they're still considered like, oh, that's not our talent pool. But I think that this is changing. So I've been definitely discussing this topic also with communities, for example, from Africa, or again, with communities from Asia, and also knowing how those people can be given the opportunity to really work for world-class companies that would never happen in the past ever. And I think that remote work is not the fact, which I despise with all my heart, the way of thinking that people have, that remote work means that you'll be able to work from home. Like, how can you be so narrow-minded? You know, this is ridiculous. So for me, it's an opportunity that is going to step by step. It's going to be a long journey, and I don't think in my life, although who knows, so let's be optimistic, that the world is truly going to become a global village, and that people all around the world will be given an opportunity based on their potential and skill rather than the location in general.
Yeah, and I've actually worked with some people in similar time zones in the US. You know, I've worked with, obviously people don't think much of somebody working for a US company from Canada, but you know, why is it different for somebody that's working from like Argentina on a New York time zone, which I've worked with people from Argentina a lot. You know, they're sure they might think that there's language barriers and whatnot. But I feel like, you know, that might be an example of bias as well, where, you know, they can do the work. You know, oftentimes they're being offered a lower rate to do it as well. But they're on the same time zone. You know, granted, like local currency is a little bit different, especially in Argentina's case right now with the blue dollar and things like that. But I feel like, you know, the same thing would go with Europe and working with, you know, people in Africa. Like it's all adjacent, like they can work on the same time zone. You know, I've worked with professionals in Cape Town, South Africa, and, you know, they work with Europe a lot. So, you know, why not Lagos? Why not, you know, one of the North African countries, you know, something like that. And that time adjacency seems to be a big thing as well that I've noticed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely going to be also other aspects, like, for example, a very simple thing, GDPR in Europe, IT security, it's not going to be easy to outsource or even hire people in another country.
I had another question here that seems to be well geared towards what we're talking about too. How do young professionals build relationships during COVID? I know that the pandemic's been pretty difficult, especially for people coming out of school. Do you have any tips for that?
I think, and I've actually discussed this topic earlier this week, that it's had a massive influence on well-being and mental health in a negative way, obviously, especially when it comes to children and I would say 15, 16, 17 year old teenagers. That has been really massive. We do need social interaction. So that's the first thing. And I'm saying this right like this because many people think that, oh, I'm remote, so I'm against meeting in real life, which is completely not true. We are social creatures and we need to, and it's especially very important for the development of young people. So if they can build social interactions, young people, I think they can, but definitely this is not the way we need it. So I think that the COVID-19 pandemic and everything that happened during the COVID-19 pandemic differs from everything today that is an opportunity and is a choice. So as much as young individuals, pretty much everyone was very limited during the pandemic to do anything. And the only thing that we had was a Zoom or MS Teams call or whatever. We have tons of other tools. That wasn't enough. And there was definitely isolation. There was loneliness because there was nothing that the people could do. And especially I would say that when it comes to effective teaching, that was in most cases a big challenge because sure. Teachers were not ready. Schools were not ready. Parents were not ready to dedicate that much time and to make it really a spectacular experience for everyone. So that was definitely an emergency solution. I think that definitely people can, but that would be an emergency, not really a choice. And if we talk about remote working and building relationships, what I think is great that you, for example, can stay home and learn a different language if you're a teenager, right? And you don't have to commute, for example, to a language school or any extra classes. You can do this remotely and let's say every 2 weeks, then your parents can drive you, which is a huge opportunity to everyone. And then again, the difference is between flexibility and forcing someone to do this online. So unfortunately, although I'd like to say that working from home during the pandemic could have a positive impact on young people, I'm going to say no. For me personally, if I'm considered young, I don't know, but I did meet tons of people online that I've had the pleasure meeting in real life afterwards, which was an amazing experience, and it still is. But I think it's a different story.
That makes sense. And I think that seems to be like a larger issue to unravel as we're going to go through things. And also for people that are like returning to school in person after, you know, that was like their core experience, like coming out of high school, or even for the kids that are in high school right now, that's a huge hurdle to get over. And maybe they'll make a comparison of it as they're going through. I feel like there's going to be a lot more on this topic as we come out of the pandemic. And this is a loaded question. For remote versus in office, what's a viable solution for everyone?
Well, the simple answer would be hybrid. Here we go. Problem solved, but it's not. So what does it mean for everyone? I think that we can't speak about everyone because the world has changed to this extent that today we value individuals more than ever, okay? Which was never the case. Also, when we look at labor in general and the way it's developed throughout centuries, now is the time when we talk about mental health, well-being, flexibility, diversity, all these things that make people make it happen that people are in the center of whatever we're doing. So everything is becoming people-centric. I would say that if a company is thinking about implementing, I don't know, remote or hybrid, there are tons of combinations, by the way, and it's not like there's one definition of hybrid even. It's hybrid remote, remote hybrid, remote first mindset, hybrid first, 2 days in the office, 3 days at home, some people only remote, some people forever in the office. Really, seriously. So I would say that it's definitely the nature of the business that determines the work model, because a good example is going to be that during the pandemic, I worked with a big customer service company, and then they were running a survey whether people wanted to work from the office or they wanted to work from home. And the people were against working from home. And that would be a big surprise to everyone. But why? Well, the answer is simple. Usually, offices were located in smaller cities, and the proximity to the office was there, literally. Yeah. People who worked there were young graduates, and they earned a lower salary than we could think of, which resulted in them sharing an apartment with someone or at several people, having no conditions to work from home. And they just felt like it made sense. But then on the other hand, if we look at other industries where people need flexibility when it comes to time, they have, I don't know, children that they need to pick up from school. Mm-hmm. They have people that they need to take care of. Then definitely this kind of flexibility should be taken into consideration. But then on the other hand, when we look at flexibility, we can also look at location and at companies that are growing and saying, hey, we're really open to hiring top talent, and this can happen globally, and you can work wherever. That is a different story. Working from anywhere, that's a completely different story. Right. And then that would be part of their strategy. So if there's something in the middle, I mean, I've worked with remote first companies that never had an office, and they are absolutely amazing, and I love them. I worked with companies that are hybrid in this manner that there is an office, but whoever wants to go, and I also love them and their culture. There is no one size fits all approach. I think that the future is all about choice, flexibility, and results rather than place and time.
Cool. And I definitely agree with that. Can hybrid work actually work?
I know that many people say no, but I think that yes, it can work. It can absolutely work if we do it right. And I'm convinced. Why? Because, let me tell you when it's not going to work. Maybe this way. It's not going to work if companies are going to expect people to be in the office twice a week because we need to stay with the old normal. And then 3 days or 2 days a week, you can work from home, but you'll be doing the exact same thing as in the office. And we are forcing you to be in the office because that's the way it is and that's a rule, okay? And then you work from home, but we offer you ultimately nothing to make it right. That's going to fail because hybrid is not a mix of a location without a certain location. It's taking what's best from the remote first model, which is async communication, async collaboration as well. It's the entire online structure, the entire digital experience, using technology to its best to automate our work, okay? And then when we look at the office and the social interaction, then this is something that can be replaced by technology because we think it makes sense. So then if we structure it this way, that we want to be around one another, to build relationships, to do brainstorming because we want to, you can brainstorm online too. And I've done that hundreds of times and effectively, but you may not want to, okay? And it's your choice again. So then I would say it definitely makes sense to design your work schedule and also as a company this way that there will be some activities that are primarily remote and some that maybe will be office based, but not this way that I require you to do so. But we as a team understand that it adds more value if we meet in person. I don't know, once a week, once a month, once a quarter, I don't care. Because we know it makes sense, not because someone's forcing us, but, and that's my approach, we are able to operate in an excellent manner without meeting, but we choose to meet for a reason. And this hybrid model can work.
I like that. And for some kind of intercompany team meetups that I've seen proposed recently, you know, including at companies that I've worked for, there's this emphasis on, hey, we're going to throw an in-person event. You know, it's a good way to meet your teammates. We're going to pay for airfare and take care of, you know, anything else that needs to be done. And if you can't come, that's fine. You know, we're just offering you the chance. And I think that, you know, just leaving that option open is great. And then also, you know, for the people that maybe have a schedule conflict, it's overhead money saved for the company. And that's a bonus too. So, you know, I feel like if somebody doesn't show up, it's not the end of the world. You're giving them the flexibility to do what they need to do, which is going to increase their productivity as well. And that's a net positive, you know, and I've had events that I've had to skip already myself, you know, in that context. As myself as a remote worker, I'm not opposed to showing up to an in-person event. It's taken a while to get comfortable with that during COVID and whatnot. But you know, I'm definitely not opposed to that. And I miss that interaction as well. So you hit the nail on the head by saying that, you know, in-person interaction does foster teamwork for sure. And does an office culture need to change to accommodate remote work, or would that model kind of work the same way?
Okay, actually, I wanted to say something to the previous question, but your question now is even more towards what I'm willing to say. Sure. So I think that when it comes to luring people into the office, well, that's not going to work. But yeah, it's all about a power relationship in that case. And sugarcoat it. Yeah, we give you this because it's so amazing, but the truth is you have to. But we try to make it fun. I think it was Bank of America who did that. That was a dramatic statement that I commented on. And that makes me feel very uncomfortable that something like this is even happening. Like, we don't want to make people feel like they have to, but they have to, huh? So I think that companies that in which people will really, truly, genuinely want to come and meet, even to social events, like you've just said, and if they don't, they feel like they will miss out because it's so amazing to be there. They won. They won, you know, not with perks saying that, oh, if you come, we will give you a cupcake. I'm still referring to that Bank of America situation. yeah, we will give you a cupcake, or things that are not natural in any way, you know, or saying that, oh, if you come to the office, we will give you ice cream. There were ideas like this as well. Mm-hmm. It's not about giving you anything. Obviously, when you come to the office, it's lovely to have all these things there because that makes the experience fun, but it's not the principle of you coming to the office in the first place. So when we look at the structure of offices now and what companies are doing, they're becoming spaces that are dedicated towards collaboration, but also individual work, because again, there will be people who don't want to work from home and it's their choice. They will want to commute each and every single day. And I accept it because that's part of the entire flexibility plan, isn't it? So open spaces with cubicles, a work schedule that's 9 to 5, that's a complete no. And I think that I remember during the pandemic when companies started downsizing their office spaces. I remember that the real estate industry was very aggressive and they were saying, oh, this is just temporary. Everything will go back to normal. You know, people are engaged only in an office space, this and that. And I was like, yeah, you're in a dramatic situation. So obviously you're shouting as much as you can. Mm-hmm. But then I think that office spaces will stay, but the role will be different. Definitely different. I mean, I don't want to go and work in a cubicle for 8 hours, like literally no, to be on the phone with someone or a video call in a suit. Goodness, like, why are we being so fake? It doesn't make sense, you know?
Right.
One more thing, maybe I have to say it. I've never understood how we can sell services, goods, products to customers that are not with us, but they're all around the world. But people who sell them have to be on site. I don't see the logic. I'm sorry.
I agree. And I've seen some pretty crude examples of that for sure.
Yeah, we all have.
And while you were saying that, I was thinking like, well, I was personally in an office, we would have pizza parties and people still would have a hard time attending those. Like they'd be like clamoring for turnout. But I don't think that's what people really show up for. I can think of, you know, I'm just thinking from my own perspective again, showing up for a work conference and, you know, it was about the people that I genuinely was, touched by, that I was there to see, who I regularly kept in touch with. And that may not be everybody at the company, but everybody has their own little pocket of, say work friends, their circle per se, and that's natural. And that doesn't mean that they, you know, are opposed to anybody else in the company. It just means that, you know, that's kind of like their social circle that way. And I remember being really excited for a conference, not because, you know, there's perks there, you know, we were taken out to dinner and things like that. But I actually got a cronut from New York and we did a little food exchange. And I traded that box of cronuts for some Tim Tams from Australia and then some chicken rice from Asia Pacific region. And you know, it was really cool. And we were like, wow, like I haven't seen you since the last time and we keep up via Slack, but here we are interacting, joking together. And I feel like that's really healthy for culture in itself. Maybe I can squeeze in one more question here before we sign off. What are effective ways to onboard and engage remote employees? We got about 5 minutes left, I think, here.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. When it comes to onboarding, especially in remote, I think it's all about automation and also maintaining the human touch. So there are different approaches. Everything that's repetitive can be automated, essentially, absolutely. And you can give people their own time to do it within their own time, okay? You don't have to sit on a Zoom call for 6 hours and onboard someone every week that you're like, God, you know, I can't take it anymore. But there are companies that do it, like, trust me, you know? They've reached out to me even pre-pandemic, because again, I was doing this before.
Sure.
the pandemic. I'm like, you know, I have a big problem. I'm like, what's your problem? Oh, you know, we hire 20 people every month. And for 2 weeks, the manager is completely drained because he has to go through everything with all new employees. And I'm like, okay, so what do you do? Oh, you know, we do this and that. I'm like, okay, does he do the same thing over and over again? Yes. I'm like, why isn't it automated? Like, people, like, what are you doing? You know, so definitely automate whatever's repetitive, everything about the company, the mission, the vision, I don't know, the departments, the way we work, and also some courses or, I don't know, trainings that someone has to go through on their own. And then in the meantime, let's meet. There are a few companies that executed this way already. I don't want to share names because there are many and I don't want to say two, but they're very, I would say, known and obviously online. So they do it this way that during the day you have, for example, 4 hours to get familiar with this and that. And then hour number 5 and 6, you meet with the manager, you meet with the team, and you meet with your buddy when it comes to all the questions and everything that you need to talk about. And then also what is really cool in some cases, especially in hybrid companies, they also invite people to the office. Not again to sit and do the very same thing, but again for the social interaction, for a team meeting, things like that. And I think it's amazing. And when it comes to engaging remote employees, oh wow, that's a very tough topic and we don't have much time, but I think that definitely not by practices such as, oh, let's watch Netflix together online to do team building. Like there were companies doing things like, yeah, seriously, I feel like synchronously watching something on Netflix with 15 other people on my laptop. Amazing idea. No. So definitely not this. I think that a great framework is OKRs to make people engage so that they feel that they know why they're even working here. And also it's definitely kudo cards, something that I've implemented in many companies as well. And in addition to that, I think it's all about appreciation as well and great leadership, because if you're going to have top bottom manager who only tells you what to do, you feel like a tool, you feel an asset, rather than a contributor to the common goal. So those components definitely, not necessarily sending someone. I saw that during the pandemic again. I have to mention this. That's my favorite example. There was a question on one of the forums, how can we engage our people who are now working from home? And someone responded, oh, for team engagement, we have sent, because it was cold, it was winter.
Right.
We sent everyone a jar of honey. Like, this is how they to do with engagement. Like, what are you doing here, you know? But I thought, like, you know, in the beginning, I used to comment on things like this. Today, I'm like, just, I'm just not going to waste my time.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Could have it with toast.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, Nadia. And you have so much to say. I think this is only, you know, the top of it. For people that are interested, Nadia Harris, remoteworkadvocate.com. And she's on quite a variety of social media out there. Look for the article that she mentioned. There's a lot more content on the website and on social media. And then just a reminder, you can view more content from Origin Story on originstoryseries.com and across LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Nadia, thanks so much for coming on, and I'm looking forward to possibly revisiting this in the future and for our future collaboration.
Absolutely. Likewise. Thanks so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You too. Thanks so much.